Down to Brass Stocks, good morning.
Hello, good morning there.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm not too well. I'm calling to let the hospital know that the medication, they tell you to call this number to receive your medication. But when you call that number, they've been calling from last Monday. I've been leaving my name and my number. I haven't heard a thing up to now. I'm almost out. I'm one day out. Just got one day medication left.
Mm-hmm.
Now I called. I called the COVID hotline, and I must say the lady there was very rough. She was very rough. And
what is your medication to do with, sir?
What is my medication that I use?
COVID medication.
No, I use my asthma medication along with blood pressure.
But were you calling the COVID hotline, mother?
No, I called to ask the question. Now I call the medication line. There's a medication line where you call and get your medication delivered. They say.
But you said you call. You say you call the COVID hotline. You told me you call the COVID hotline.
I did say that, but I'm making a conversation to explain to you. I call the medication line. It's ringing constantly from last Monday. I call every day because I'm out of medication. Now, I call the COVID inquiry line, and I ask about that line. You can also call that about anything you want to inquire. And she said to me that they're very busy, and I should leave my name and my number. I told her I did that, but she said to me to come at my wrist.
Mm-hmm.
I asked if I can fit. She said I can come at my wrist. But what I'm calling, I'm just calling on a constructive criticism. If they can have some more people working there, get some more people working because they're very busy.
I think that is the source of the problem because you want more people in the pharmacy. They want more people on the wards as doctors. They need more people in the testing facility so that we can get these tests done. We need more people answering the phones at the hotline. We need more people at the airport to deal with all the tourists that are coming in. I think that the general problem is that everybody thinks that we need more people working everywhere that has to do with the management of this crisis.
Yeah.
So my advice to you, sir, is that you keep trying that medication line, and I'm sure that in due course you'll get through. The alternative, of course, is that you can either, if you are uncomfortable going yourself, see if you can find a younger person in your family that can facilitate you and see if you can get that medication collected instead of delivered, because the system is under tremendous pressure now. And I can guarantee you, sir, that there are not a few people who are in this situation. This is Down to Brass Stocks. Good morning. Good morning and welcome.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
Not too bad. This is Michael?
Yes, sir.
Okay. There was a time I used to have to call you minister. So I guess we could go back to first name basis now.
Oh, you call me Lashes.
Lashes, yeah. I look forward to the day that we accept the American standard so that once the minister title of minister is ascribed, it's never taken away. So I'll be able to call you minister for the rest of your life. But we spoke this morning at length, and you made a very valid point regarding the situation that a number of people who are told that they cannot return to work because of COVID testing are concerned.
Yeah.
And I'm happy that you have taken the opportunity now to expand a bit on it. So what's the situation?
Yeah, Peter, we have seen some situations where employers are actually demanding workers to come back out to work.
Mm-hmm.
Although that person or employee is basically waiting on the test to come back in relation to COVID-19. They're being pressured, and my position on it is that it is indeed an unlawful act by the employer to say to that employee, look, You have to come back to work or else. You know, you have a situation where someone is waiting on a test, say about the 3rd of January, and telling the employee, well, you have to the 3rd of January, you have until Wednesday this week to come back in and threatening them. So I had been retained and instructed, you know. I was sending necessary correspondence to the employer. Let them know that it's indeed unlawful under the laws of Barbados. And indeed, send a letter to the Ministry of Health to get to fast track to get them to produce the test results. But this lady is fortunate because, of course, she can afford a lawyer. But in my
opinion, she can afford you.
Well, afford a lawyer. Let me leave it there. Right? I'm at the bottom tier, sir.
You're a Queen's Counsel, sir.
But let me say this, sir. That they hold will be treated to vulnerable employees who don't have any income, who cannot employ a lawyer, who need their rights protected. So that is the group of people that we need now to touch and deal with, who then falls at the hands of unscrupulous employers. Mm-hmm. I have a suggestion, Peter. Currently, the Community Legal Services out of Barbados, that we can probably look at that to see if we can make an amendment only for this period of time, Chapter 112A of the Laws of Barbados. We can amend it for this period of time to allow the Community Legal Services Act to capture matters of employment, particularly during this COVID period, for employees who need legal representation. Or we can direct the Director of Legal Aid to interview these persons, obviously on Zoom, grant them a legal aid certificate where their rights are being infringed so that they will be legally protected. This is something that is worrying me. And yeah. We cannot let this situation fester.
Yeah, and I want to support you 100% regarding the fundamental issue that you've raised, that I think it is entirely improper that a person would be told to go home on quarantine until results are available and then be pressured by an employer to return to work or lose money because of the fact that this test is taking so long.
The employer also owes a duty of care to other employees in terms of a safe system of work on the health and safety at work.
Right.
So they're endangering other employees.
Yeah. The point that you and I differ on, I would say, is this whole question of how do you enforce this mechanism? And I think that one of the reasons that we have an employment tribunal is because you can approach the employment tribunal without a lawyer. I think the idea of creating a facility where people can get legal aid so that they can get a lawyer so that they can raise these issues is perhaps unnecessary and unfortunate. And I wonder whether it wouldn't be a lot more easy for the Ministry of Labor to play a supervisory role in terms of these matters. Because I think that if a person can pick up the phone and make a call to an officer at the Ministry of Labor and say, look, I get unfair, and government can intervene in the same way that they did for the tourists and say, look, to an employer, hold a little while, stick a pin, because it is not the employer's fault or the employee's fault that the test has taken so long to come back.
My feeling, Michael, that would be a better route. I believe both can work. I think both can work. Because once that employer in the private sector see a lawyer, a letter come from a lawyer on his on his desk, he would think about it, and he probably have to seek his company lawyer's advice on it. So the system is so overburdened now that the place is in another system, that is the tribunal system, will cause something. That is an urgent situation. So I believe that the amendment, whether only you can do it on Zoom, the Parliament meet and make the amendment, or give a directive to the Director of Legal Aid, and then those persons will say, you know what, I have been affected by this COVID-19 situation. Employers are telling me I have to come back to work or else. And then you send the pre-action protocol letter and you move on there.
My feeling is that because it is so urgent, and I don't have a difficulty with, I think that long term, we need to look at legal aid and we need to look at the circumstances under which legal aid is available.
Correct.
So that needs a review. But I'm just saying, in the short term, I feel the idea of the minister having a directive or the minister making a directive to appeal to the good offices of employers under the circumstances is really the better solution. I just think that's a better short-term solution. And I wonder whether that's not something that can be pursued, you know, in the short term.
I think we can pursue both. All three, as you mentioned, both, all three angles. And we can pursue both, pursue them.
Yeah.
I think so.
But it's a good idea, though. And I want a little suggestion,
Peter.
Yeah. No, it's a good suggestion, and I appreciate, you know, I thank you for making it and for using this forum to get these ideas out, because we are faced with a problem that is new, and we have to find all ways and means of trying to deal with it. And I think that, you know, that is one of the mechanisms that we can perhaps adopt. So,
I just want that employer, Peter, that if they touch my claim, I had to instruct the court.
Right.
I wanted them.
But you see, the critical point that you made earlier is that not everybody can afford the services of a lawyer of Queen's Counsel variety like yourself. And I mean, we're trivializing it, but it's a serious point that the average person doesn't have access to that. Somebody who's working in a gas station, for example, doesn't have access to legal services. So the system has to be made in a way that either you can get those legal services for free, or alternatively, you can exploit a mechanism like calling an officer at the ministry and saying to that person, look, let's respond to it. But it's a valid criticism, it's a valid concern. And these are the kinds of things that are popping up and certainly that we need to resolve, right?
And then you offer the solution.
Is there any likelihood that you're going to be on the DLP's ticket? And we're going to hear your name mentioned as a candidate this year? You know, they have you on the lane.
Peter, I really deal with matters pertaining to law. And,
but the politics is always with us. The pervasiveness of politics is such that we always have to talk politics.
I mean, I'm here as an advocate of the rights of the disadvantaged, and they're using my services to protect the rights of the disadvantaged.
No word yet. No problem. I hope that when you decide to if you decide to make that plunge, not when, if you decide to make that plunge, that you will share your intentions with us on this program by a similar medium, right?
Finally, in a minute, Peter, the impact of the COVID-19 on the criminal justice system, I believe that we have to look and see how, in some ways, so we can revamp the criminal justice system in terms of moving trials forward, because we just cannot sit back and say, you know what, we're in a situation, so we have to start all trials. The question is whether this thing, whether trials by jury, obviously those dates have been vacated. The question is whether this might be a time where we can say, you know what, let us put the option with judge alone trials, which would give somewhere to social distances, because you don't have a whole jury pool in a room, and you have to choose from a jury. You just have the judge, the two attorneys, the prosecution, the defense, and the accused witnesses. And then you can even do case management and look basically at, you know, you might have a case and it might be turning on a question of law. So you can file your submissions on it, and the judge can make a decision.
So but did the Bar Association not have a view on that expressed some concern?
Yeah, but I'm saying at this time, in this period of time, it's optional. I support optional. I'm not saying the great thing.
Compulsory.
Make it optional. You understand where I'm coming from?
Okay.
And the question is, if you have someone today who's charged with a single piece of ammunition, single round of ammunition, under the amendments to firearms, that person is automatically remanded. Can we seek to make an amendment to give the magistrate at the lower court the power to deal with that matter in this period here?
Environment,
because automatically when you go to prison and you go before a trial, or you plead guilty before a judge, once you have no previous convictions, you can get a fine. So what you're saying is putting that person in prison when you could give the magistrate powers in this interim to deal with the matter, sentence one thing, and then you get rid of that problem.
Yeah. Well, I can only hope that the Attorney General is listening. I mean, I know he's in Parliament now, but perhaps he may be listening or someone may speak to him, because I think that these are the kind of constructive short-term measures that we have to take, because the reality is that it's not a normal situation.
Right.
And the last thing we want is more people on remand at this stage, because the prison closed for now anyhow. So
you could even broaden it and say, look, persons up there who are on remand for even the same round of bullets or whatever, who have tested negative, but there's no likelihood that they will be in prison if they plead guilty before a court of law.
Mm-hmm.
If we can look in ways of, we can do it by Zoom technology, mm-hmm. or even grant them bail with conditions that they isolate for a period mm-hmm. of time from society, and then we mm-hmm. get rid of those issues.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's my position on it.
All right.
Thank
you very much, Mr. Lash. And I think, and those such kinds of comments are always welcome on this program. We look forward to hearing from
okay,
you
sir.
More
sir.
In the future. All right. Take care. You enjoy your day too. Down to Brass Tacks, 434-1790. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Ms. Undecided. How are you, my dear?
Oh, fine.
It's so
thank
lovely
you.
To hear your voice on this first program for the year.
Yes. A happy new year to you and your Babalicious.
Thank you. Thank you very much, dear.
Okay.
Good.
Are he okay? Is he okay?
He's great. Your he's partner. Great. Back out to work today for the first time.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Oh, well, uh-huh. Peter, I am hearing, you know, about the hazard pay, and you're only hearing about the nurses and the doctors, right,
mm-hmm.
Peter? So tell me, what is hazard pay? Has a pair in including the law enforcement, the firefighters, I mean the pharmacists, the people that face the public, I mean the ones that that work from home, they may gain nothing in for mm-hmm. them, but the ones that face the public, I'm not hearing the law enforcement mentioning in this thing,
mm-hmm.
or community health workers. What you hear about doctors and nurses?
Yeah. Miss Undecided, you are on fairly good grounds today. I think there's a difference between what hazard pay is defined as and what hazard pay ought to be defined as.
Mm-hmm.
The standard definition, as I understand it, is that there are persons who have been contracted to work in health services that have been told that as part of their contract of employment, they are given hazard pay. Those are persons who are coming in direct contact with persons who are COVID positive, and as a result, had to take particular precautions, and they're paid hazard pay for that reason. I am told by medical people that it is a norm within the medical fraternity that persons who have to be directly exposed to infectious diseases are paid more because of the risk that they take to themselves and their family. I, however, have a difficulty, like you, with mm-hmm. the narrow definition of it, because I believe that a taxi man that takes up a tourist from the airport that may very well be COVID positive, also exposes himself to potential risk. I think that a person who handles garbage that comes out mm-hmm. from the house of a family that may have someone that's COVID positive exposes himself to potential risk. I think that a rider who rides on a minibus in the company of someone who may potentially be COVID positive, you know, we heard that bartenders and DJs mm-hmm. and people that work in entertainment have mm-hmm. been exposed to COVID. And I think that those persons, so the concept of hazard pay and the idea of defining hazard so narrowly in terms of the medical fraternity only, I have a problem with. And it's mm-hmm. for that reason, Ms. Undecided, that I was opposed to the idea of giving anybody hazard pay, period. Because I think that when you start talking about frontline mm-hmm. and you define frontline, the definition of it, the proper definition of frontline can end up with a long, long line.
Yeah,
and I don't really know that we're in a position to put everybody in that lane.
But hazard pay include postal workers, the grocery store workers, the food processor. It's a whole line of things that them call them face the public.
Go.
So they include it in mm-hmm. that hazard line.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
the private sector now will have to consider they have got no law that commanded them to pay the, you know, like the cashiers and the supermarket people up to the mm-hmm. private sector employers, right? But all this has appeared, including custom officers, all of them. But you
and
hear about doctors and nurses all the time.
When you come in at the airport, you're greeted mm-hmm. by someone who is not customs officer, immigration. First person that greets you is somebody from the Ministry of Health, I believe, to check to see whether you have a certificate. Then you go to a person who is a regular officer at the airport that is greeting you and telling you which lane to go in and putting the ban on your hand. That person should perhaps be given hazard pay because that person in the front lane, you know?
So they're doing the physical hard work.
The flight attendants that are on the plane with you, why can't think of anything more hazardous than that? Because you are in a confined bubble with people who may be COVID positive for an extended period of time. You must be getting some kind of hazard pay for that. And I'm just saying that when you think about it, it adds up. Because almost everyone is working in a hazardous situation and ought to be perhaps compensated over and above what is normal for that. And that's the reason why I would say if you can't compensate everybody, don't compensate anyone.
Quite
the girls who working in the stores, as you said.
Yeah, it's not only for doctors and nurses. It's a whole list. Yeah, so I want to come and get this work out.
But this is wonderful, though, that you and I agree on something for a change, Miss Undecided.
Yes, please.
Because the last time you and I agreed on anything, so was when I was a dem. You remember those days, the good old days?
Please. Yes.
Up at the other place when we were singing from the same hymn sheet.
No, I wasn't saying from here. Say hymn sheet.
You didn't sing it from from the same hymn sheet, but now you get a different hymn book.
No,
you're going from the ancient and modern. You're going from the ancient and modern hymn book to a different hymn book. The songs of praise.
I am who I am. So
God get you back to the ancient and modern. Miss Addison, thanks a lot for calling.
You
have a great day. You and your family. All right. This is Doug the Brass Stacks. Good. Somebody's saying, what about soldiers? For example, we have to pay soldiers hazard pay for going to war. What is the logic of paying a doctor hazard pay for doing what that person is entitled to do? Hazard pay is for people who work directly with COVID-19 patients. Someone is saying the reality of the situation is that the concept of hazard, the concept of frontline, those are two concepts that can be very, very broadly defined with good reason in this context. And I think that was the sense of what Ms. Undecided was saying. A lady is saying, I have a home helper who worked all during COVID-19 and needs hazard pay as well. Down to Brass Stacks, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Peter. How are you?
Morning, sir. How are you doing? Good to hear you and all the best for the new year.
Well, I want to tell you all the best to you and your family before you tell me that.
Thank you. All right. Thanks. Well, appreciate it nonetheless.
Are you in Barbados or in France?
No, I am not. I am back in France. And I'm back in France. I have been here for about 2 weeks now. So hopefully it means that I have ducked the COVID.
Yeah? The package that Miss Undecided sent for your husband through you, arrived safely?
Get it right safely.
Right. The juicy pork shop.
Yeah.
And I understand.
Well, I have to admit that he's a fan of the sauce factory type of thing, because he's never been of my mind to not eat meat. So
I got
the sauce factory and Lemon Arbor were two places that he's been quite keen on. Yeah,
a good fella. You must come back around. I got to be very careful how I talk to you though, and I seriously mean this. Then this is just a side, okay? Last time you and I talk, I tell you, anything you can do, I can do better.
Fair enough.
Some little family chat went wrong, saying that I joined in your faith. You understand? But that nastiness of people and how the people think about you. You understand?
Man, you ain't got to worry about that.
No,
that
is, I'm not worried.
Ignore them
because,
things.
Because, brother, I can tell you the truth. A fella who I know to be an atheist, right, is a good friend of mine. I'm not going to distance myself from him. And because you choose the lifestyle that you want, you and I was friends in the Democratic Labour Party back in the day, right? We used to exchange conversations. You come out in the broad public and show the nation, the whole world, where you stand. Am I now to distance myself from you? So anyhow, that's enough of that, right? But I just want to say that I know who am I, okay?
In cricketing terms, when someone bowls a ball on the offside, is it the offside? Yeah, the offside. Mm-hmm. What you normally do is you flick it.
Yeah, but I flick it.
So you deal with it is that kind of ball. Just flick it.
All I want.
Yeah. Women, as I understand it, women with large bottoms. That's Curtis. I don't know. I get mixed up.
I know it's not Dennis for sure. Anyhow. Let me think to this. Let me get to the nature of my call, right? I just had to get that out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
I want to look because David yesterday, he didn't really engage me the way that I would have liked but some days, you know, David wake up on the wrong side of the couch and he could be very distant at times with certain people. However, I want to look at this whole thing, this whole exercise that taking place right now in the United States, right? With the invasion, and I want to hear your take about it. But before I get there, I want to say to you, when I listen to the health people guiding me and advising me in Barbados, because I turn off social media, guiding me and advising me about what is happening in Barbados in respect of COVID-19, they have my full support, and I have my confidence in these young, especially Dr. Corey Ford. Oh, I like that man. You understand? Young man, heading a department down there in St. Lucie, and just listening to Dr. Corey Ford, I know there's hope around. And I'm happy, extremely happy to see, even though we had a spike, and numbers are coming down, and I'm happy about that. So I got my full support, and I be guided by the health people in Barbados. Right?
I agree with you. And I like the point, you know, you're saying, look, let's follow the health advice, and I'm comfortable to follow that, and then we can discuss the politics. I'm speechless regarding what happened in the United States. I listened and I watched the thing on the news, and I couldn't believe it was happening when I saw it happening. And it was almost like when I was watching the planes crash into the tower for 11, September 11th. It was a similar situation where you're seeing this thing and you were actually confounded that into disbelief that this kind of thing was happening. It was shocking.
I actually thought it was a sci-fi movie.
What I would say, though, is that when I started the program, I said, these things tell us that there is a cause associated with bad governance. Mm-hmm. And Donald Trump was a train wreck from the very beginning. It was like watching a bad movie where you knew that something like this was likely to happen. But he has exceeded all expectations. So the question now is, how do you walk it back in terms of American democracy? And my sense is that they have two mechanisms, which is the 25th Amendment, which would allow them to remove the president immediately. My understanding is that the 25th Amendment allows for an appeal process, and that can take several days. They have an impeachment process, which can take several weeks. The reality of the situation is that this has exposed a vulnerability in terms of the American presidency, where you have one man who is supposed to not be a king, because remember, the Americans were a reaction to the idea of monarchy. So they said, let's create one man without the power of a king. But ultimately, he does have the power of a king, because in the same way when King George went mad, you can't really remove him. The reality of the situation is that Donald Trump's mental health is seriously in question, but you can't really remove him quickly. And it creates vulnerabilities for America, not only in terms of the nonsense that he may do, it creates vulnerabilities in terms of the things that he can't do, which is react to a crisis that takes place at this time. Right now, America is a sitting duck right now because you don't have anyone to make decisions. So that's my sense of it. And I think that we can learn a lot from it.